This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Multi-award-winning author Mohana Gill is an advocate for healthy living and nutritious eating in a sustainable manner. The author, cook, and nature lover is keen on sharing the life-giving powers of nature through food, and her latest book, Flowerlicious, is a selection of recipes that use edible flowers, and it follows two of her other works, Fruitastic, which celebrated fresh fruits, and also Vegemania, which looked at plant-based recipes. And she joins me now to share how she is chipping away at that stereotype that healthy recipes are boring and bland. Welcome, Mohana. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Lovely to have you here today. So maybe we can just start off with you telling me a little bit about yourself. I know you were born in Myanmar.
Yes.
Tell us how you came to be in Malaysia.
I was born and brought up in Myanmar and lived the first 20 odd years of my life in Myanmar. And then I studied overseas. And then I came to work in Malaysia as an expatriate in 1965 at the University of Malaya.
Okay, and you were a professor, am I correct?
Or well, a lecturer. That's correct, a lecturer, yes.
Okay, and I understand that you stopped working, I think, was when you had your first child.
That's correct. Yes, I was one of those women who always felt that if I had a baby and if I could afford it, I would like to stay home. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And my husband was like, very easy, you know. If you want to work, that's great. If you don't want to work, that's great. Mm-hmm. So when I was expecting my first baby, I stopped working. And I was technically a stay-home mom for 12 years.
Wow. Okay.
And I had three babies in 4 years. And I think looking back, Juliet, that was one of the happiest times of my life.
Wonderful. You know, not many people enjoy that whole experience.
I did, because it was a time when I was always needed. There was somebody or the other looking for me. There was I had so many things to do. And I had a lot of time with the children, cooking with them, taking them to school, bringing them back and doing all the things. And I really, really enjoyed doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I did, yes.
I mean, before we talk about, you know, getting children interested in cooking, I mean, what was it that started your passion for cooking? I know it was something that got you when you were quite young.
Yes, when we were living in Burma, and my mom was a very good cook, and we were three girls, and I was the youngest of the three. But for me, going into the kitchen was like the best thing that could ever happen. Get up in the morning and smell the dal being cooked, you know, or something. You know, in those days we cooked with charcoal or with fire, and the first thing they would do is put the dal on in the morning so that it takes 2 or 3 hours to cook.
Right.
So every excuse I got, I would run into the kitchen. And my mother was very particular that all of us three girls, we learned everything. Mm-hmm. So we were taught how to cook and how to sew and how to clean. So whenever it came to my turn for doing other things, I would sew up with my sister and say, I'll do this for you and then let me go and cook for you. Yes, so it was a passion, actually.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And I mean, that is something that you've taken on, you know, throughout your life, I would
That's
say,
correct,
right?
Yes.
But what was it about nutrition and cooking? I mean, when did that become important for you?
You know, even going as far back as those days, right, in my mother's time, although technically maybe they didn't know about nutrition, but they knew. They knew which are the foods that were good for the children, which had more value and that kind of thing. So from very young, I learned all that. And my mother always said that natural food, that is produced in season, food that, you know, you pluck from the garden, maybe those were the best kinds of foods that we... So I think unconsciously at the back of my mind, I knew that cooking was not only about just cooking, but also to feed people. And I think one of the things I learned from my mother was the importance of feeding people, the joy of feeding people. And that's what I do. Even today, at my happiest time is when I'm in the kitchen cooking for somebody and being able to feed them. Yeah, that is my passion.
That is a wonderful thing. And, you know, my own late mother, my memories of her also, you know, she always had that love of feeding us, you know, of keeping us nourished,
That's
of keeping
right.
us, you know, and it's a very motherly thing to do. It's a very motherly need to sort of see your children well fed. So that's what got you interested in cooking. When did you sort of think that, you know, I need to put all of these wonderful recipes that I've come up with into books? So, you know, when did you want to become an author?
After a very, very long time. I don't think I even ever thought that I might write a cookbook mm-hmm. or a book for that matter. So my whole life were like the children, then they were growing up, then they were studying. So it was like the whole of your time was spent for the children. It was only after all the three boys graduated mm-hmm. and even one of them got married. And then suddenly I felt that I've got all this time and I wanted to do something for myself for the first time without having to think about who to feed or what to do. So I started to think and I thought, what shall I do? And because all of us love cooking, so everybody said, why don't you write a cookbook? Wonderful. Why don't you write a cookbook? And I thought about it for a long time and I looked through the net and I looked at a lot of cookbooks and I was thinking to myself, there are 20,000, 50,000 cookbooks, you know. Do I really want to write another cookbook? At that stage, my husband got involved in this anti-aging society.
Uh-huh, yes.
And so everybody's very worried about getting old, you know, and how to not only grow old gracefully, but also in a healthy manner. Mm-hmm. And we eat a lot of fruits in our house, always. We have always eaten a lot of fruits. So I went with my husband to a conference in Las Vegas, mm-hmm. Anti-aging conference. And I was sitting down there and I was looking, and everybody was obsessed about not wanting to age. One of the most important things was your looks. So, you know, all the kinds of Botox and all the creams and whatever, anti-aging, that kind of thing. And the other thing was pills. Pills for everything, you know, a garlic pill, ginger pill, for everything. So I started to think and I thought, what happened to the real food?
Yes.
Why is it that we always popping pills and we're only thinking about how we look, you know? What about the inside of you? So then I thought about it for a little while. Then I thought, okay, I think I'll write a book about fruit. So that's how it came about. And I didn't just want to do a normal run of the mill cookbook. So I thought about it and I thought I'll do a book on fruits, but divide it into two parts. Mm-hmm. One part would be telling everybody about a little bit about where the fruit comes from, a little bit about the nutrition, well, just a little bit, and a very beautiful picture of the fruit. Mm-hmm. And then the second part of the book would be recipes. Mm-hmm. So that's how I started to do. And I mean, I never thought that I would, you know, and everybody, my children would tell me, Mom, who's going to buy our books?
Ye of little faith, son.
So my husband said, don't worry about it. Just let her write. And then, you know, if nobody buys it, just let her give it away to her friends and family. That'll be fine. So that's how I started. Yes.
Okay. And so that was, of course, fruit-tasting. I mean, and you had you weren't like a chef in that sense, you know, working in restaurants or anything.
No, it was I'm the home, very much of a home person.
Well,
yes.
We all argue those are the best chefs of them all. And of course, fruit-tasting, your second book then was Veggie-mania, am I correct?
Yeah.
And that also took on a very personal writing approach.
That's right. So when I wrote Fruit-tastic and I got an award, mm-hmm. a special award of the jury, then I thought to myself, I must be doing something right, right? So then as I was writing Fruit-tastic, at the back of my mind, I was already thinking that maybe I should write a book on vegetables as well, mm-hmm. fruits and vegetables. And at that time, my eldest son, who was 23 and just graduated as a doctor, decided to become a pure vegetarian.
Okay.
And he was a real connoisseur of food. He loved his food, and I used to enjoy cooking for him. So then I began to think, you know, what am I going to feed this child who loves food so much and now has become a vegetarian? Mm. So what I did was I converted a lot of the food that he enjoyed and made them all into vegetarian food. And then I wrote on the same format as Fruit-tastic. So I wrote Veggie-mania. And of course, when I got an award as the best vegetarian cookbook in the world, then I thought to myself, I think something is okay, you know?
But could you give us an example of, you know, taking a recipe that was probably meat-based and turning that into a plant-based one?
Yeah. Okay. Say, for example, he loved Yong Tau Fu.
Mm.
which was like. So what I did was I used the same vegetables, but instead of fish, I put in potatoes with a lot of other garnishing and stuffed the vegetables with the potatoes and prepared it like yong tau foo.
That's right.
And similarly, you know, when the yam basket, instead of having prawns, chicken, so we filled the yam basket with vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I think it all turned out to be quite exciting, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I mean, what about your critics, your sons? I'm sure they must have loved it. They were the acid test.
That's right. At the end of every meal, I would get this. That's tasty, Mom. And that's good enough for me. Yes.
Yeah. I'm speaking today to Mohana Gill. She's a chef. She's an author. She's also a nature lover. And we're going to be discussing her latest book, which is called Flowerlicious. And we're also kind of talking about the stereotype that healthy recipes are boring and bland is completely outdated. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. And I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is the very lovely Mohana Gill. She's a chef, she's an author, she's a nature lover, and we're talking about the books that she's written, and her latest one is Flowerlicious, which is a selection of recipes that use edible flowers. So just before the break, Mohana, we were talking about Fruitastic and Vegemania, so that's sort of focused on, of course, fruits and vegetables, and now, of course, there's Flowerlicious, which focuses on edible flowers. So why was that something like, it sounds almost like a journey, almost like a trilogy of sorts.
Yeah, this is the third part of my the books that I wrote, the coffee table books, Fruitastic, Vegemania. And I think Flowerlicious sort of completes a troika of coffee table books. And I think this is the last book that I'm going to write.
Aww.
And I really wanted it to be something spectacular, something a little bit different from the normal kind of cookbooks. And I've always been fascinated with flowers from the time that we were very young. And I thought that let me see if we can do a book on Flowerlicious and call it Flowerlicious, of course. And but sometimes, you know, Juliet, you think about something for a long time, but it only happens when the time is right.
That's right. Yeah.
So I was thinking about this for like a couple of years, and for some reason or the other, things just did not gel. Mm. And then suddenly I met somebody, and then I was talking about Flowerlicious, and they said, oh yeah, why not? Maybe we can do the book together. So only when I got this team together, then I started to think about it a little bit more. Although at the back of my mind, I already had what I wanted to do. And this book was not following the same format as Fruitastic and Vegemania, but a different kind of a format, you know, a nice flow. And I also started to think that in today's age, there's so much stress in this world. Mm. And everybody seems to be worried about something. And I wanted to do something a little bit different that would make people happy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this, I think, and you know, flowers is something that makes everybody happy. No matter what kind of a mood you're in, no matter what you're doing, somebody brings one small little flower for you and that makes your day. So I wanted to sort of leave in my legacy something that anyone who would open the book and look at it would make them very happy. Mm-hmm. So this book is, although technically it is a cookbook, but again, it is not. Because even if you're not a cook, even if you're not interested in recipes, you would still enjoy looking at the book because it's so beautifully presented and you've got such beautiful flowers around it, mm-hmm. and some very, very interesting recipes as well.
Yes, it's stunning. I mean, I had a look at it. It's absolutely beautiful. And there's pictures not only of the flowers and the recipes, but there's also pictures of you with your grandson, for example. You know, it all looks so lovely. And I do understand that you drew upon your memories of growing up in Myanmar as well for this collection.
That's correct. Because flowers in Myanmar have a different kind of connotation. You know, we grew up with flowers, and all Burmese women always adorn their hair with fresh flowers. As you can see, like our daughter Aung San Suu Kyi has always got fresh flowers
in her
hair. So we grew up like that. Even as a young girl, every time there was a function to go to or somewhere, there was all these fresh flowers that we put in our hair. And then, of course, you know, growing up, as you go through the garden, you pluck a little bit of this and nibble it in, be it a rose or be it whatever. So flowers have always been a very important part of my life. And I always wanted to do a book on flowers. Mm-hmm. But it was only later on that you read a little bit more and you learn a little bit more. Then you realize that it's not only one type of flower, but there are so many different types of flowers that we can use in our cooking. Not only necessarily in cooking, but for garnishing and for making it look beautiful, for its fragrance and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As enhancements as yes. well, right? Yeah. And did your mother used to use flowers as well in her recipes?
A little bit, you know, like in those days, like little rose petals maybe, uh-huh. or maybe jasmine and that kind of thing, but not as in such a sophisticated kind of manner. But mm-hmm. generally speaking, yes.
Mm-hmm. But in yeah. your recipes, you are using that in various manners
yes,
as well.
Yes, I am.
Right? I mean, what are some of the examples you have of using
flowers? For example, the moringa. Mm-hmm. The moringa. I think a lot of people don't know that the moringa flowers are edible and also they have a lot of nutritional value. And my relationship with moringa is as from childhood, because we had a lot of moringa flower trees in our garden. And so the flowers were used in our house for making soup, for making just a stir fry or doing it into some kind of a salad. So, yeah, so I've drawn on some of those experiences as well. And of course, then added on other things that I've learned over the years and maybe tried to innovate some new recipes as well. For example, in the book, one of my favorites is nasi lemak with moringa flowers, because I thought normally nasi lemak, right, we have the usual things. And so I thought, why don't we, instead of the kangkong, we add the moringa flowers, which are much more nutritious and it's beautiful to look at. And when you eat the moringa flowers, it's a crispy and it has got like a mushroomy kind of a taste. So, yeah, that's the kind of thing I tried to innovate in this book.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, tell me a little bit about that experimentation process. You know, how do you go about deciding which ingredient is going to go into which recipe? How does that work?
Sometimes it's by guess and by God, you know. I think about it and I think that maybe this will go. So I try and put it all together, then have a little taste and see whether does it taste okay? Is there a big contrast between this and that? So I think it's all you as you are cooking, I play in the kitchen, you know, uh-huh. with my food. And then I think my family are so used to the fact that when we come to the dining table, they don't know what they're going to eat because they don't know what mom has come up with. So we just, you know, mix and match, chop and change, and then do something at one time, and then the next time it's something else. And my children will always tell me, why is it, Mom, you can't cook the same thing again and again? Because each one, even if you make one curry, sometime you may add something else, sometime you may add something else, and it becomes, it's the same ingredient, but it tastes a little bit different.
Different, yeah. I always had this problem with my mother and my aunts. You know, when you ask them to give you the recipe, they're like, oh, you put a pinch of that, you put a... But I'm glad that you've come up with a recipe book as such. So, you know, there's something that we can follow. And, you know, looking through it, there's even things like desserts as well, like flour-based ice creams, for
that's
example.
Right, yes.
I mean, that's interesting as well. So did you try and experiment with different things as well?
Yes, we did. But of course, don't forget that there are a lot of flour-based ice creams that are also available in the market. Mm-hmm. But for the book, we tried to do our own experimentation to see how it would work out. Mm-hmm. And some of the pictures, you know, because of the heat and the ice cream, we had a little bit difficulty in doing photographs because we were melting very, very fast.
Yeah.
But at the end of it, it all worked out okay. We did with flowers, and I tried to use a lot of our local, like the bunga kantang and the roselle flower, and then the blue pea flower,
yes.
all those things into our recipes. And I think it all turned out to be quite exciting, actually. And when we were doing the photographs, we were like, wow, you know? Yes. And then more than anything else, Juliet, this was a book that I really enjoyed writing. Mm. And we had four or five people. We had two photographers, we had a designer, and we had Vivian who was putting everything together. And the 2 months or 2.5 months that we did this, it was such a happy, happy time.
Mm.
The house was full of flowers and food. And there was not one single day when someone was in a bad mood or when someone, you know, was not really very happy. So I think it shows in the book, because it was not only me, but it was everybody else who was part of this book, mm-hmm. was so happy to see this book coming into fruition. And I think every time we looked at it and we thought, wow, you know, that's great. And of course, when the book was published, then it was like, yes, everybody really loved it. And of course, we had my little grandson, Ari, who came home every day from school at 1 o'clock and was very much part of the of the whole cooking process.
How
and
lovely.
Tasting and, you know, running around. Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely, very, very... And we became such good friends as well.
That's lovely to hear. And I mean, just going on, you know, you mentioned your grandson. I know that, you know, for you, you've said that from experience, children always will eat what they cook. And so you always empower people and say that they should cook with their children. Am I correct?
That is correct, yes. Because, you know, as a small child, like my grandson, for example, you ask him to chop a cucumber for you, be it just with a plastic knife or whatever. What he's chopped, he will eat. Mm. And from the time he was very, and he, one, this is, he's a very hands-on child. He loves. So whenever I'm in the kitchen, he is there. So he will make rotis, or he will make a salad, or he'll peel a potato for you. And he will always say, this is what I mean. Dada, have a look, I mean. So I think children need to feel a part of what they are cooking, they're part of that, and they will eat it very happily. And the other thing, of course, don't forget, they will always eat what their parents eat, although they may not say, but they look and see what they're eating. So whenever we are eating on the table, we have food that he can pick on, and he will eat on. He eats everything, anything.
That's
because
wonderful.
He sees that we are eating, you know. Only sometimes he may say, is that got chili, a little bit of chili? But other than that, so I think children will see what you're eating, mm-hmm. and also if they're part of it, get them to bring in a tomato for you. Get them to just, you know, pluck, like we grow a lot of vegetables in the garden. So Ari will go to the garden and pluck some vegetables in the basket and bring in and say, Mom, this is something that we're going to cook. So it becomes part of them, and they feel that this is what they have done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is very, very important.
It is, you know.
Very important, yes.
It gets them on that eating, a lifelong path of, you know, eating healthy, you know, get them when they're young, get them involved in the cooking, the preparation.
And also take them to the supermarket, you know. I take him to the supermarket and ask him, what do you want? And he knows all the vegetables.
Wonderful.
And he knows how to choose. And he will tell you, I want this today and I want that today. So it's a lifelong lesson, but at the same time, it is done in a beautiful manner, in a fun kind of way, without having to tell your child, eat this and eat this. We never tell them. We just put it there and let them try.
Yeah, without forcing them. Like, this is good
forcing.
For you. This is what you have to do.
I think the minute you start saying it's good for you, you've got a problem.
And you did a whole series, you know, involving your granddaughter
That's
as well.
Correct.
Your
yes.
granddaughter, Haley. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, when Haley was about, you know, after I wrote Fruitastic and Vegumania, the moms came to me and said, Mrs. Gill, what do we do? Our children don't eat fruit and vegetables. So then I started to think. And at that time, my granddaughter was getting to be like 2, 2.5 years old. And I was cooking for her. And I was seeing how she was reacting to the food. Then I thought that I will write a book for children. So I wrote 2 books. One was Haley's Vegumania Garden. And one was Haley's Fruitastic Garden, where Haley and her best friend, Zach, they go to the vegetable garden. They discover the different kinds of vegetables. And it's an illustrated book.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very lucky because we got both the books got an award for best in the world. And so that's how Haley came about.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that it was so nice for children to know that another child is telling them about the fruit or the vegetable. For example, in the Haley's Vegumania Garden, Haley and Zach go, as they're going to the garden, they find a little rabbit, a fluffy little rabbit. So the rabbit then takes them to the garden and explains to them all about the goodness of the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So the book becomes a little bit more interested,
And more for, I mean, more, I guess, palatable for the kids,
yes,
right?
You
know, because it's got a story. And
then we have, of course, at the back of it, we had recipes,
mm-hmm.
very, very simple recipes that the children could do with their parents or by themselves. I think also it's very, very important for the children to be able to go into the kitchen with their parents, not only moms, dads as well.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And, you know, and do a meal together, then sit down together and eat that meal and talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have lost today, this art of talking.
Mm.
Everybody sits on the dining table with a handphone. And nobody talks to each other. Yeah. I have a big problem with that. And I think that children need, when they're sitting down, that is the family time. That is the bonding time. Mm. Whether you say, you know, this one is more crunchy than this, or this one is sweeter than that. Talk about the food that you have cooked. Talk about the taste of the food. Mm. Talk about how it is grown. Those are the important things, you know, that unfortunately we seem to be missing out.
Yeah, and it just builds stronger ties, yes, you know, and just yes. builds those, like you said, lifelong ties. You know, I'm sure your children still remember you sitting and feeding, cooking for them and feeding them. And, you know, those memories are something that they will keep forever.
I still remember my mom.
Yes.
So, you know, and so I'm sure that my children and grandchildren will also, in time, will remember some of these little things. Yes.
And, you know, this what I like about all of these three books especially is that, you know, it's very plant-based. It's, you know, advocating for, and you also use very traditional ingredients, things that we can find in our local markets. And that is something that is important for you as well, is it not?
I think no matter which part of the world we live in, we should use what we produce locally. Mm-hmm. We should use and consume what is produced in season. Mm-hmm. That will give you the best taste, the best nutritional value. Sometimes I think we import foods and fruit from long distances. By the time they come here, the poor fruit is suffering from jet lag, I think, and has lost some of its nutritional value. Yeah. But like, for example, a rambutan. We have three rambutan trees. You pluck a rambutan from the tree and you eat it and look at the difference in the taste, mm-hmm. than what you, and also the nutritional value.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes we need to understand that our own country, for example, we live in Malaysia, we have such beautiful fruits all throughout the year. Why don't we eat more fruits that we produce in our countries? Watermelon, bananas, pineapple, papaya, guava, and all these are so good for you, and such a variety.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can use those foods and we buy them when they are in season, it gives us so much more benefit than buying something that has come from South Africa or from Australia or wherever.
Yeah. And we sometimes forget that 50 years ago, so having things like fish and meat on our table, that was actually rare because, you know, many of us couldn't even afford it. I mean, a lot of people think that this whole going vegan or vegetarian is very, it's a new thing. You know, people are kind of distrustful sometimes or suspicious of vegetarian cuisine. What would you say to them to get rid of this resistance of plant-based cooking?
As far as I can remember, we ate meat, but the quantity that we ate was very small.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe meat was once a week.
Mm.
And even then we had chicken with potatoes. Always. So it was not like, we were not eating chunks of meat and chunks of fish. And in Burma, of course, because of the lot of rivers with lots of fish,
mm-hmm.
and smaller fish, river fish,
that's
fresh
right.
fish. So we ate a lot of fish. But I think over the years, it has become a fashion to be able to eat more and more meat. Not only more and more, but also quantity.
Mm.
So it's like a big steak or a chicken, whatever it is, and a little bit of vegetables. Whereas in our time, it was the opposite.
Yeah.
More vegetables and rice and a little bit of meat maybe and a little bit of fish. And I think we need to go back to our roots. We need to go back to eat what our mothers and grandmothers ate, because those are the foods that have so much more value. Today, if you look at meat, really, I mean, I'm not saying that you should become a vegetarian, but I think consciously it is important for us to add more fruit and vegetables in our diet. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you look at a chicken, it takes 45 days for a chicken to grow, and it's pumped with antibiotics and God knows whatever else. And I don't know what we are eating. And similarly with so many other kinds of meat as well. But I think that if you still enjoy eating your meat and your chicken, which is fine, maybe in smaller quantities, maybe less frequent, but I think the addition of more fruit and vegetables, and today we have like more healthy food like quinoa, mm-hmm. and couscous and things like that. If we add into our diet, we get the variety, and at the same time, we get nutritional value.
Mm-hmm. But everything in moderation, right?
Yes, that everything in balance and in moderation.
That's
yes.
right. And so, I mean, you did mention that this might be your last book. Flowerlicious might be your last book. I'm very sad to hear that. But, I mean, what do you hope, you know, that people will get from this wide collection of award-winning books, no less, you know, that you have come up with over this last few years?
Well, the reason I told you that I don't think I'm going to write any more books is because it is very, very difficult to sell books. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to buy books. And talking about this, I feel that we should change our mindset and start giving books as gifts, which we don't do. We, you know, you go to a child's birthday party and you buy him a box of chocolates, mm-hmm. and or a toy which he will use for 5 minutes and he's forgotten about it. The chocolate is finished. But if you give him a book, he may not look at the book today. He might look at the book 3 months from now on, and it's there in his room. So I think we need to do that. And I feel that what I've written so far is quite complete. It's got fruits, it's got flowers, it's got vegetables, and a lot of books about children, about my series. Children's series is a series of 8 books. Then I also did a book on Myanmar cuisine. Mm-hmm. So I think that's enough for posterity. It's enough as is my heritage. And I'm going to spend whatever little time that I have now left in trying to promote my books, which I never did actually earlier on, mm-hmm. and then see what happens.
Okay. All right. And, you know, for anyone who's interested in getting not only Flowerlicious, but all the other books that you've written, I mean, where can we go to get them?
I think most of the books are now with me, because I think even people like MPH, they don't have space anymore for their books, so they've given it back. So if anybody wants to buy any of these books, I have them with me. So you can either email me on mohanagill@gmail.com, mm-hmm. or you can send me a message, and then we'll be very happy to get the book to you.
Okay.
Flowerlicious, of course, is available in MPH because it just came out only about a month or two ago. Yes.
Okay. All right. So, you know, again, that email address to get in touch with Mohana is mohanagill, that's mohanagill@gmail.com. And Flowerlicious, the book, which is a selection of recipes that uses edible flowers, that is available at MPH Books.
That's correct, yes.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you very much. It's been lovely talking to you.
I've been speaking to Mohana Gill. She's a chef, she's an author and nature lover, and her latest book, of course, is Flowerlicious, a selection of recipes that use edible flowers. But there's a whole other bunch of books that Mohana has done, including Fruitastic and Vegemania. You can get in touch with her if you'd like to get your hands on those books. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.